I'd like to present sutta again, some sutta exploration. This is in Anguttara Nikaya, one of the main collections of the Pali Canon, English translation here by Bhikkhu Bodhi, called the Numerical Discourses. The reason for this name is because the suttas here are simply arranged by the number of subjects they are addressing, from one subject to 11 subjects. This is from the Book of Threes, sutta number 102, called A Goldsmith. The Buddha using the simile of a goldsmith to compare it with the work of a meditator, just like the goldsmith is refining and purifying gold so that he can produce all these beautiful ornaments. So the meditator is purifying and refining his or her mind in order that they can free their heart from defilements. Bhikkhus, when a bhikkhu is devoted to the higher mind, from time to time he should give attention to three marks. What's the higher mind? Adi Chitta. That is in particular referring to Samadhi. Now the three trainings, the training in higher virtue, the training in higher Samadhi, and the training in higher wisdom. But it's also a little bit wider, not just specific, very narrow Samadhi, but generally anyone who wants to train their mind, anyone who's devoted to spiritual mental development. What is here called three marks is in Pali nimitta. It's actually an interesting shift in meaning. Nowadays when people talk about a nimitta, often they pronounce it as nimitta, but the Pali has a double T, nimitta. They refer to some visual appearance, particular bright light, or sometimes also scenes and little movies appearing in their mental eyes, in particular in a light. But the original meaning, the way the Buddha is using nimitta, is much wider. You could also translate it as characteristic. You can translate it as quality. So you could say, someone who's devoted to mental development, from time to time they should give attention to three qualities, to three signs. From time to time they should give attention to the quality of concentration, the samadhi. Second, from time to time they should give attention to the quality of exertion. And three, from time to time they should give attention to the quality of equanimity, upekkha. So three areas where we have to focus our attention and our effort on, and from time to time, that obviously means at the appropriate time when this is required. So these are three things which we have to develop in our mental cultivation, but which you cannot develop at the same time. But depending on which one is the most appropriate at that particular time, depending on external and internal in particular conditions, and we should give particular attention to one of them. The first one, samadhi. The second, effort, exertion. And the third one, equanimity. If a bhikkhu devoted to the higher mind attends exclusively to the quality of concentration, it is possible that his mind will veer towards laziness. And of course, such a mental sluggishness, becoming too quiet. The samadhi is also known as the practice of samatha. Samatha means calmness, tranquilizing the mind, making the mind tranquil, making the mind calm, is an important aspect of samadhi, together with rapture and strong mindfulness, spiritual happiness, the quality of, in particular, gladness, joy, rapture and bliss. And that is also part of samadhi, and the very sharp mindfulness, the brightness, clarity, awareness of the mind. But as the expression samatha, calmness, indicates already, a very important aspect of samadhi is calmness, tranquility. But understandably, if we always only work on calming the mind, we can overdo it. And then the mind becomes too sluggish, too quiet. Lazy is quite a strong word. This particular sutta, devoted to the higher mind, that can refer to quite refined and subtle, sublime mind states. And similar, the defilements which occur there can be on a very refined level. So laziness is usually in a more basic kind of defilement. But here it's a certain lack of energy in the mind, a certain lack of really actively investigating in particular. If the meditator, on the other hand, exclusively attends to the quality of exertion, it is possible that his mind will veer towards restlessness. I think you all probably can recognize that if you have experience in meditation, how you go between these different ones. And so you are making an effort and calming the mind. The mind is unruly, thinking, and then you succeed and the mind becomes much calmer and is settled down. But then you go to sleep. Now, what is called here laziness, a very classic defilement, which is maybe more typical, is the sleepiness. You just end up nodding. Okay, now you end up nodding and you notice you can't really get much energy, so you make a big effort. Exertion. And so you overcome maybe the tiredness and the nodding. But now the mind goes to the other extreme, goes towards restlessness. Can no longer properly focus. If the meditator extends exclusively to the quality of equanimity, it is possible that his mind will not be properly concentrated for the destruction of the taints. The first one is interesting. Why would we even have to attend to the quality of equanimity? Should we not put forth effort and either we tranquilize the mind or we energize the mind, we abandon defilements, we focus and develop our samadhi by being able to sustain attention on the suitable meditation object. We deliberately develop this factor of gladness, joy, rapture, bliss. We practice wisdom, we investigate Four Noble Truths. We look at the three characteristic impermanence, unsatisfactoriness, not self. We investigate the unattractive nature of the body, mentally taking the body apart, 32 parts, the four elements, earth, water, heat and the wind. and so on. But why am I equanimity? How can you develop the higher mind by just being equanimous? And I would suggest the old simile of planting a tree. I'm very happy how our Bodhi tree is growing. This summer we have such unusual and continuous rains, and the Bodhi tree absolutely loves it. And I can still remember when it was planted, it was about the size of Isini, this young Sri Lankan girl. And by now it's quite an impressive tree. And I often look at the tree and I have the vision that it will grow and become even bigger, and they're like the big Bodhi trees you see in many places. But there's a certain limitation in the ability of the tree to grow, an internal program. And for sure you have to provide a suitable soil. The tree needs water. Bodhi tree in particular needs sunlight. A Bodhi tree can actually not really get too much sunlight. As long as he has got water, he's absolutely happy with really hot and full sun all day. He loves it. And fertilizer, sunlight, and watering. But once these things are all provided in the suitable soil, you cannot make the tree grow faster, whatever you do there. And if you continue pouring more water, and it's actually possible to kill plants by overwatering. They become waterlogged, the plants, the roots start rotting. It becomes not just ineffective, but it becomes counterproductive to give more water. It's similar, not the Bodhi tree, but other plants, they can get too much sun. You can put too much fertilizer. It will not make it faster, and it may even reduce the effect and may even kill the tree. And of course, the Bodhi tree is a symbol for developing the quality of awakening, enlightenment in our own heart. So similar in our meditation practice, like a tree growing, there are certain limitations how fast our heart can do the transformation process. You can also compare it to, say, pregnancy. It just takes a certain time, and you cannot feed more food to the expectant mother and give her vitamin pills and expect that the baby will be finished in 3 months rather than 9 months. It's not possible. Certain things, even under the ideal conditions, so even if you do everything absolutely right, you're the perfect meditator, and you do absolutely exactly the way it should be done. At times, more input will not make your progress faster. And at that time, all you can do, and the best thing to do, is looking on with equanimity. Because all the conditions are already in, you're doing the right thing, you're keeping sila, you're sitting, you're chanting, you're investigating, you're quietening the mind, and so on. You're doing it all. But the transformation process simply takes time. And even with precepts, maybe starting on the, this is more Adi Sila now, the higher virtue. And of course, it may not be that difficult for some people to start keeping 5 precepts. Or even 8, but if we keep 5 precepts for a week, that doesn't mean that the transformative process of keeping precepts has been completed in a week. Or similar, if you keep 8 precepts for a month, and this is quite something, and the vast majority of human beings on this earth will never keep 8 precepts for a whole month. But obviously the transformative effect, and it's very powerful transformative effect, keeping 8 precepts, that thing will not be completed by 1 month. But now once you keep these 8 precepts very pure, and you cannot increase it in any which way, all you can do is keeping them for longer, for the transformation to occur. And we need that patience. And then to just be able to wait for the transformation to continue and complete. And I think another example for equanimity can be, let's say you try to meditate and unhold some thoughts, maybe thoughts of sensuality, sensual fantasies, old quadras, and something like that, and it comes up. And of course, you make an effort to abandon it, you make an effort to develop the opposing quality, and then maybe you feel grumpy, angry, so try to develop metta, you have sensual images coming up, and then you try to bring up the perceptions, images of the unattractive nature of the body. What does the body look like when you remove the skin? What does a kidney look like? Or what does blood look like? Is that attractive? And so on. But sometimes it may not really work. These thoughts may continue coming, these images continue coming up. And sometimes a good approach then can be also just to look on with equanimity, as long as one doesn't act on it. Obviously, if we get angry and then we grab a knife, this is no longer the time to look on with equanimity, or you let your anger now out with a knife. But as long as we can prevent it coming out in either speech, communication, not just speech, we have to be careful what we tweet or what kind of videos we publish on TikTok. It's all communication. But as long as we are not having the defilement coming out in action or in speech and communication, but as long as it's only thoughts in the mind, sometimes the best approach may be for some while to just look on with equanimity and just let these thoughts do their thing there, not act on them, and look on with equanimity, and they may exhaust themselves. But in particular, I think it's an important thing to recognize that the internal transformation process requires its time. And sometimes the best thing to do is not to do anything. The Bodhi tree has got the sun, has got the water, has got the soil, has got the fertilizer. And there's nothing I can do now to make it grow faster, except for patiently allowing him to do it, and not possibly causing harm by thinking it should grow still faster and dumping more fertilizer, which may be counterproductive. But of course, if we only look on with equanimity, then we can't abandon the defilement. If you only have the approach, defilements come up, I just treat them with equanimity, that will not lead to their successful abandonment. But the crucial thing to do is using the wisdom faculty, panya, to recognize which of these three qualities is in this current situation now for my mind in that situation and that internal and external conditions the most appropriate one. And then we pay attention to that sign, to that quality. But when a bhikkhu devoted to the higher mind from time to time gives attention to the quality of concentration, samadhi, from time to time to the mark of exertion, and from time to time to the mark of equanimity, his mind becomes malleable, wieldy and luminous, pliant and properly concentrated for the destruction of the taints. Suppose a goldsmith or his apprentice would prepare a furnace. The furnace is the oven where the goldsmith is heating and melting the gold. Heat up the crucible, where the liquid gold is being held in, take some gold with tongues and put it into the crucible. Then from time to time he would blow on it. From time to time he would sprinkle water over it, and from time to time he would just look on. If the goldsmith or his apprentice were to exclusively blow on the gold, it is possible that the gold would just burn up. I'm not sure whether it's just the blowing on the gold, but the blowing will usually increase the fire and increase the heat. So in any case, and this seems to be, you're increasing the heat, but at some time there's too much heat. And then it's the same with cooking. You may be more familiar. You may be more familiar with cooking than with working as a goldsmith. And obviously, if you don't get the oven or the pan or even the water hot enough that it boils, you will not cook well. But it's definitely possible to make it too hot, as you probably all have experienced. And then the black thing, the completely burn comes out, and you know that was too much heat. If you were to exclusively sprinkle water on the gold, it is possible the gold would cool down. No, this is now the opposite. Now you have to protect it from being overheated, but if you cool it down too much, it will also not work. Then your cake comes out, and in the middle the dough is still warm. Not properly baked. If you were exclusively to just look on, it is possible the gold would not reach the white consistency. This is probably the easiest to see. No? You can't cook by just equanimously looking on. You have to do something. But if the goldsmith or apprentice from time to time blows on it, from time to time the blows on it means increases the heat, heats it, from time to time sprinkles water over it, cooling it down, and from time to time just looks on, the gold would become malleable, wieldy and luminous, pliant and properly fit for work. Then whatever kind of ornament the goldsmith wishes to make from it, whether a bracelet, earrings, a necklace, or a golden garland, he can achieve his purpose. So too, when a bhikkhu is devoted to the higher mind, from time to time he should give attention to these three qualities. From time to time he should give attention to the quality of concentration, from time to time to the quality of exertion, and from time to time to the quality of equanimity. And if one does that, one will develop the abilities. This is actually a very long sutta if you go through all the abbreviations. You develop now all the various kind of psychic powers and abhinyas, and in the end, the destruction of the asavas, the destruction of the taints. That is all possible if one gives proper attention at the right time to these three qualities. And as I mentioned before, if the goldsmith is not so familiar to you, I think the simile works reasonably well with cooking as well. Then once, for example, once you have the pot with the rice at the right temperature and the rice boils, there's nothing really you can do to improve it. If you make it hotter, it will just overboil. If you reduce the heat, then it maybe stops boiling. So once the rice is properly boiling, then you just have to look on with equanimity. That's the best you can do. And have the patience until the process has completed. Concentration is samadhi in Pali. if you say in English concentration, the term is very difficult to translate, samadhi. The other term, samatha, which also describes the practice of samadhi, has this strong meaning of calm and tranquility and calming. Whereas in English, if you say concentration, I don't think it has a very strong sense of calm, and also doesn't have the other important sense of samadhi, namely gladness, joy, rapture, and bliss. Now, when people in English hear concentration, I don't think they think of joy, rapture, and bliss, and they also don't think so much of being very, very calm and tranquil. So it's important to understand that this English term is a little bit lacking these aspects of samadhi. And if you have these three qualities, concentration, exertion, equanimity, it doesn't work so well, because concentration and exertion in English are quite close. Usually when people concentrate, they feel it's a big effort of exertion. Whereas in the Pali, in the particular ones, it's real samadhi, is quite an effortless state of incredible calm and peacefulness, suffused with bliss and rapture. And once that state is quite stable, it's actually very, very stable and doesn't require any further effort at all. It's actually one of the characteristics, that the samadhi is stable in itself. It will still exhaust itself and come to an end, but as long as that state lasts, it's quite inherently stable, particularly the deeper ones. So you could also translate it as the characteristic of tranquility, the characteristic of exertion, and the characteristic of equanimity. That is maybe a little bit easier to see these three aspects. Yeah, thank you for listening so equanimously. And a few minutes, any comments? Can you relate to that in your own meditation, how you try to make a big effort and then the mind just becomes too restless? You try to finally calm it all down and then you start nodding. Or one takes it to just too equanimous, sometimes connected with the faculty of the delusion, and doesn't make sufficient effort. Although I think most people nowadays, in our conditioning, I doubt that there's a big problem that they're looking on too much with equanimity. Possibly that is the most neglected of these three. Because in our society is so fast, we are so impatient, everything is so quick. Everything constantly becomes quicker, the speed of traveling compared to anything before 150 years has increased so outrageously. Internet connection speeds, everything constantly faster, the product cycle. So we live in a time where we usually lack patience, and the productivity in commercial enterprises and organizations, businesses, is very, very high, constantly increasing. So we are, I think, not so prone to try to do a meditation by looking on too much with equanimity. I don't think this is the biggest problem. And I think often it's actually quite helpful to give more attention to particular that quality, looking on with equanimity. Yes?
I was just thinking sometimes one may misunderstand that one is looking on things or in an equanimous state when there's actually indifference.
Yeah. Someone points out there's a typical danger that we mistake looking on with equanimity for indifference. And that is true. This is quite a high practice in that sense, because looking on with equanimity, as the Buddha describes here, has to be equanimity paired with mindfulness and wisdom. Yeah, it shouldn't be indifference. But I think that occurs more externally. Now that people in terms of an external phenomena think they're practicing equanimity, when in reality it is more based on delusion as a state of unwholesome indifference. For those who are dedicated and make an effort and try to meditate and go on retreats, I'm not sure whether that is so common that they would look at their own mind and what's happening there with a state of equanimity based on indifference. My feeling is that most people are rather over-trying too hard. Yeah. Stefan?
The simile of the goldsmith working with a very precious, with something that is precious. So the mind, especially developing the higher mind, is at least as precious.
Thanks for pointing that out. For the podcast, someone mentioning what struck him hearing that is that the Buddha describes with the simile of the goldsmith, he describes someone working with something incredible, precious, incredible, valuable, and that is a very apt simile for the mind, because a mind is something incredible, valuable, incredible, precious, in particular the well-trained mind. And in fact, the fully purified and cleansed and refined mind is the most precious thing, the most valuable thing in the whole universe you can have, or that exists, exactly. This is maybe the reason that the Buddha doesn't use cooking as a simile here, which probably would be more within the range of experience of more people. But then you would be lacking this incredible, precious object the goldsmith is working with, which is such a beautiful simile for the mind.